Geek news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast
on the Ordinary Pickleball Broadcast.
Your host, Kyle Abaron of the World Steve.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Big Ball Broadcast. My name is Kyle Abaron. I'm an LA-based voice actor. You can hear me as Kiba on Naruto and Cartoon Network, and various bit parts on Daphne and the Brilliant Blue, Mermaid Forest, and Gunsword from Genion Entertainment.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I'm an anime journalist and webmaster of KyleAbaron.com. I am in Burst Angel, Volume 6, which hit shelves this past Tuesday. You can hear me twice pop up in Episode 21. I won't tell you which characters I voice. I'll leave that to the listeners to determine.
That's the fun part about bit parts, trying to pick apart who's voicing what, because they never really attribute bit parts to character names to the voice actors. So.
No, but because I do use my normal speaking voice when I do anime voice roles, I'm real easy to pick out.
Yeah, you do sound like yourself on Full Metal, actually.
Oh, let's not even go there. My most disappointing voice work ever.
But a fanboy's dream come true. You're like the biggest Full Metal fan there is.
That is true. Now, if only I can get on the movie, that would be a fanboy dream come true. Right, then I have to fly to Texas.
Little things.
Bribe somebody to let me stay with them, since you're no longer there.
Anyway, this week on the show, PS3, PSP, a bizarre ban in China, Serenity makes money after all, Apple's 1 billionth iTunes download, Indie 4, and giant monkeys in springtime. But first, let's start off by checking the mailbag, the Big Ball Broadcast at gmail.com. This one comes from Simon Copeland. He says, "Hey, Kyle and Steve, I'm emailing you to give you the feedback you like so much. I've been listening to the broadcast since episode 8, and it has been increasingly entertaining and informative, even though I'm from the UK and most of the release dates you give don't apply to me. Thanks for the great shows and keep up the good work." Should we bother giving UK release dates?
No, I kid.
When we find the information, we just basically go with what's listed there on the page. So we do apologize if you guys across the pond are rolling your eyes going, "Yeah, but what about us?" Sorry, I mean, most of the audience we have, I think, are in the United States. We are a United States-based podcast, so it's not meant as a jab to anyone out of the country who listen. We certainly appreciate your listenership, and if we do come across some information regarding international release dates, we'll try to include that in the future.
But I will say, so freaking cool to get feedback from across the pond. That rocks.
Dude, that's incredible. We've heard from Australia, New Zealand, and now the UK. It's great.
And we keep track on our world map. Every time we get a new feedback from another place, we put another push pin on the map. Good time to bring up the whatchacallit thing.
Frapper.
Frapper, there you go.
If you go to KyleAbaron.com or thebigballbroadcast.blogspot.com, it's all linked together. But if you go to the main page, or I think there may be a Frapper link actually on the Blogspot page. In there?
I'll check while you continue.
Okay. Well, at least on the main page of KyleAbaron.com, there's a link for Frapper. And for people who don't know what Frapper is, it's a chance to put yourself on a map, literally. United States, wherever you live or around the globe, you can sign into this page and basically give a shout-out. And then a little push pin will sort of appear on the virtual map where you're from. And it gives us an idea where the listeners are.
Frapper is on every single page of the website.
Okay, cool. So, when you go to download the latest episode of the show, scroll down a little bit, okay, and look on the left-hand side, and then you'll see Frapper. Click on that, and that'll take you to the page where you can just sign in and say, "Hey, I listen to the Big Ball Broadcast. I live in the UK. Enter your location or zip code, whatever it asks for, and then you'll appear on the map. "Hey, Kyle and Steve, I started listening to the Big Ball Broadcast around episode 11. I gotta say that I would never know a lot of the stuff I learned from listening to your podcast for a long time if you guys didn't go out of your way to gather the news and talk about it. Even though you guys aren't into RPGs, I am, and I really appreciate all the information you guys find on Square Enix, and I probably wouldn't know that there was going to be a third X-Men movie until it was about to come out. Whenever you guys post a new episode, it's always the highlight of my day. You guys rule, and Kyle, you're perfect as Kiba." Signed, Rachel Jackler, who says, "P.S., in case you didn't know, since I didn't hear you guys mention him on the last podcast, another Naruto voice actor is going to be in Advent Children. According to Anime News Network, Steve Staley, who plays Neji in Naruto, is going to play Kadaji, the main villain, in Advent Children. All right, thanks for the info, Rachel." And that's very heartfelt, Steve.
It was from the heart.
And another email from Chris Ramey Christman, or Christman. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, dude, but here we go. Hey, guys. I have to say that I love the show. This is my best way to get in on some of the geek and tech news and anime news. I've been a huge fan of Kyle's for years. I do have two questions. Number one, where are the show notes? Not that it's a big deal, but I would love to see some of the stuff y'all talk about. And number two, why not try a video show? It would take a great deal of editing and such, but it could also result in a much greater show. Maybe not, though. Just my two cents. Sincerely, your extremely devoted fan, Chris.
I should field the first one then, huh?
Go ahead.
Otherworld Steve is a bad, bad boy. I really don't know what more to say than that. Yeah, I've been horrible about going back and posting the show notes. I guess in mild justification, last week's podcast was cut really short because I got really sick, like bird flu sick. We never get around to going back and adding more to the podcast, so.
Nope. The truth is, you're a busy guy. We're busy people, and we do this on our own time as a hobby. We're not making money off this. So each post that you see on the Blogspot page, when a new episode goes up, you'll see a description about the content, and that technically is the description of show notes. But I'm probably guessing that Chris is looking for links to some of the stories that we discuss. Well, Steve has some of those links saved, and I'm very bad. I don't save any links. I just copy and paste the info to like a Microsoft Word document page, and I have it up on my PC next to my laptop. We record the show direct to my laptop. So I have like my little cheat screen here. So I'm not looking at actual web pages from this news. So I do apologize about that.
Okay, so what about this video cast thing?
I'll say absolutely not. editing is a nightmare. I know this from personal experience because a couple years ago, I put together a DVD project called The Dub Club. And the plan was to put out a series of DVDs featuring video interviews of voice actors. I eventually sold out of every one I made, which is great, but it took like a year to do it. It was very straining financial-wise. It took a lot of time to edit. And me and Steve both kind of have the same sort of vision. We're perfectionists. We like to put a really quality product out there. And to do that with a video cast is really hard to do, considering most people probably do theirs with a webcam, and that's really boring. Who wants to sit there and watch a guy talk, you know, with a badly composed shot in crappy video? I mean, you might as well just listen to the show when you're exercising or working or driving somewhere. I mean, we just think that this is the best avenue for the information we're relaying.
Yeah, I certainly have to agree with those two very strong points you brought up. The first is that, and certainly no ego involved, but you and I were huge geeks. And if we were to do something on video, we would have this demand on ourselves to have these like incredibly, ridiculously high production standards. This show certainly wouldn't be weekly at that point. We'd be lucky if we did one every 2 months. But as far as the format we choose to use, definitely because it's more accessible to people. You can, you know, put it in your iPod. You can bring it in your car with you. You can listen to it while you're working out at the gym. You can listen to it on your PC while you're surfing other links. So that is definitely why we do choose that venue. It reaches a much larger audience.
The output would be so random and so few and far between, it wouldn't be worth it because the effort and time and money involved, we would have to charge. I don't know how you guys feel about paying for a video cast.
Your career is in voice acting. My side jobs are in print journalism. Neither of us are really get our face out there. And
right.
Especially me, you know, you and I joke a lot outside of the podcast about me and my anonymity, about how I really keep myself hidden, and, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to even find a picture of me on the internet somewhere. We have faces for radio, kid.
Although, if someone like G4 wants to take this, yeah, we'll do it on camera. Show us the paycheck.
Yeah. I'll sign that contract in a heartbeat.
But will we have to digitally, like, pixelate over your face because you still want to be private, or what?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the whole Otherworld thing, you know, I'm not in the material realm.
You could just wear like a Jedi cloak over your face or something.
Or maybe I can just be an animated character. Who knows?
All right. Well, thanks for the emails, guys. You can send your feedback via MP3 or text and send that to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. We got one MP3 comment here from Kerberfer.
Hey, guys. It's Kerberfer from Long Island, New York here again. First off, I saw Kiba a couple weeks ago. Excellent job on that, Kyle. Glad everyone in the Naruto fan forums were pleased as well. I've taken this whole thing with the Blu-ray disc to heart, and I keep trying to tell everyone at school about the risk with the PS3s not recognizing more than one disc, but no one seems to get it. Also, congrats, Steve, on finishing the Dragon's Lair system, and I hope you feel better.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all the Naruto fans out there who really dig Kiba. Of course, Steve, we're really excited to see the final version of your cabinet and everything.
It isn't quite the final product yet. It will be really soon. I'm waiting for my coin door to come in and to get my marquee back from the wonderful Don Bluth and Gary Goldman. And once those come back and I get the coin door assembled, I'll either shoot more video or take a bunch of still pictures and post those.
And as far as the sickness goes, you're pretty much over that now, right?
It's still kind of in my head. If I sound a little weird, I can't really tell. One of my ears is totally blocked up, so I'm only listening out of one ear and kind of feel it in my sinus cavity. But I'm alive. I'm still going to work and going to school, and I'm here doing the podcast, and this won't be a 20-minute podcast, I assure you.
Oh, no. Now, the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that a few weeks ago when we talked about the bird flu and you said, it's blown out of proportion, I think someone gave it to you.
There was a case reported in the news today about a guy who contracted inhaled anthrax, and I got, like, real conspiratorial initially, but come to find out this guy has been importing animal pelts from overseas, and I guess they're using anthrax to kill disease. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but it was not a terrorist attack. It was just something that happened. Probably what happened with me. I probably contracted bird flu from a pigeon that I touched inappropriately or something. This time last year, we were under, like, feet of snow. And this year's been different. This year's been, like, really mild, freezing one day and, like, tropical the next.
Well, I know that I am very susceptible to getting a really nasty cold if there are really extreme changes in temperature. Like, it's 30 degrees outside, and then you have your house or apartment heated to 80 degrees, and you're going in and out. That constant change in temperature just messes with your body chemistry, and the next thing you know, you're out for a week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been happening naturally here where, you know, it drops down to 5 degrees at night, and then it could get up to, like, 50 during the day. And I work nights, so I'm out when it's 5 degrees.
Ah, yes. Of course, I'm out in the other coast where it'll never get that cold. So it's like beautiful sunny weather, 60 degrees. I'm like, hey, okay. No extreme temps.
Suck a fat one, dude.
Oh, man. Evil. All right. Now that we've totally gone off the deep end, let's actually get to the content of the show here. China bans human toon mix movies. Now let's describe what we're talking about here. Films such as Space Jam and Roger Rabbit, where live action and animation are mixed together, are apparently now forbidden in China from this moment on. Here's a quote from a Variety article. These human live-action so-called animation pieces will not receive distribution or distribution licenses, read the order issued February 15th. However, films and shows that have already received permits will continue to air. CGI and 2D characters alongside human actors jeopardize the broadcast order of homemade animation and mislead their development, according to the report from the state-run Xinhua News Agency. Order comes as the Chinese government attempts to increase local production of Mandarin language tunes and cut the amount of foreign animated programming appearing on Chinese television. Now, is that weird or what?
Freaking communist.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there, but yeah, sure, why not?
It's like, yeah.
You know, just culture is just a worldwide thing. We all live on this planet. Come on.
Unless you live in China.
Apparently so.
All right, that's pretty harsh, you know, because, I mean, just fundamentally, it's got to stifle creativity if you don't have input from other countries and other artistic means. I understand why China does the things they do, but it doesn't mean I agree with it.
I wonder if they're going to cut out the importation of, like, anime, because, you know, that's just as foreign to them as American stuff.
Yeah, we've all been following the news about the blockage going on Google with Chinese websites and dealing with uprisings and revolts in Tiananmen Square and stuff. It's just another communist thing to maintain control over their population.
I guess it shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, considering this is a government that will find fine you and put you in jail for having too many kids.
This is also a government that will put you in jail if you blog something deemed inappropriate, and this actually happened again, I believe, last week, where a Chinese dude who wasn't happy with what was going on blogged something, and then frickin' Yahoo helped to turn this guy in, and he's looking at least 10 years. I can imagine what 10 years in a communist prison could be like.
Just for blogging one's opinion.
Screw Yahoo, too, and I'm sorry if that's, like, just really over the top, but that's pretty messed up, you know? I applaud Google for not giving in to the U.S. government's demand for information, but, you know, who the hell's the Chinese government to approach Yahoo and start making demands? We need an IP address, and we need to track this person, and their freaking Yahoo caved, you know?
Well, I'm sure it's under regional control, you know, locally. Yes, I mean, Yahoo is a worldwide web-based sort of thing, but I'm sure it got employees for Yahoo in China going, yes, okay, sure, I'll sign the paper, whatever you want.
So word to the wise, kids, careful what you type up on the blogs, because Yahoo and AOL and MSN have already caved to government demands to give up information, so Google starts their own blog service, hopefully. At least we know they won't cave.
Whatever you do, if you go visit China, don't log into your live journal and suddenly type, the Great Wall ain't all that.
If you're there as a tourist and you're a U.S. citizen, I really don't know if there's really anything they could do about that. I would hate to find out the hard way.
Of course, I imagine now we'll get an influx of hate mail from communists, but...
I don't think so, because I really doubt your website or this podcast are available in that country.
Good point!
We're free radical thinkers. We could really screw up that government over there. Tech, video game, anime talk.
Yeah, we're really taking them down, man.
The billionth song has been downloading on Apple's iTunes website. Speed of Sound, which was purchased as part of Coldplay's X and Y album by this dude named Alex, and I'm sorry, Alex, I can't pronounce your last name, but I can tell you Alex lives in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and what I didn't know until I, like, thoroughly read through the story is that there was also this humongous prize package attached to whoever downloaded the billionth song. So, as Alex's grand prize, he will receive a 20-inch iMac, 10 fifth-generation iPods, yeah, 10 freaking iPods, pretty sweet, and a $10,000 gift card for use on the iTunes store. And in addition, and I thought this was really cool, Apple will establish a scholarship to the world-renowned Juilliard School in his name to commemorate this milestone. So congratulations, Alex.
Yeah, nice job. And if you're having trouble finding how to distribute those iPods, send one to Otherworld Steve so he can promptly eBay it because he doesn't want an iPod.
Don't get caught eBaying iPods with music already on them because you'll go to jail.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the RIAA will.
But yeah, it took Apple 3 years to hit the billion mark, which is pretty impressive. And Steve Jobs, who is Apple's CEO, was quoted as saying, "Over 1 billion songs have now been legally purchased and downloaded around the globe, representing a major force against music piracy and the future of music distribution as we move from CDs to the internet." So Mr. Jobs is quite happy indeed.
Now, of course, Alex's prizes will be out of date next month when Apple unveils the new iPod and iMac.
Exactly. But a $10,000 gift card for any item on iTunes, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that really is sweet. So that is really a thumbs up for customer loyalty from Apple. And on the other end of the spectrum, AOL gets the A-hole of the Week award for customer loyalty, because look what these guys are doing. They're raising the price of their dial-up to match the price of their broadband in order to get more people to upgrade. All right, and to quote a CNET.com blog, "First make them hate you, then ask for their money. Works every time."
I think I'm becoming kind of desensitized to business practices such as this. The same situation, like with the China thing, I understand why they're doing it, but I don't necessarily agree. A lot of people, including myself, are broadband users. It's the way to go. You know, given the choice, broadband or dial-up. Well, hell yeah, I'm going to go broadband.
Mm-hmm.
I just really feel bad for the people who don't have that option. I know there's still people out there who don't have broadband availability, and they have to pay the price for that kind of service and not have it available. That just sucks.
Yeah, that really does screw the folks who live in those rural areas where even cable TV is not up to par yet. Yeah, I have broadband too. I mean, that's really the only way we're able to do this podcast anyway, with Skype. I mean, I can't imagine if we both had dial-up how bad we'd both sound.
We have our share of technical difficulties as is. I couldn't imagine stepping it back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never dealt with AOL as my internet service provider. I get, like probably everyone else, probably get those free discs in the mail that says free trial, 90 days or whatever. And AOL must spend a fortune on these things because they have little nice artwork and keep cases and all that. And I just chunk it in the trash because I don't want to get charged out the butt.
But, you know, if there's a lesson to be learned here, I think that it's you have a choice when it comes to your internet service provider. So just, you know, do some research before you sign up with a company that's going to pull shady stuff like that.
Yep.
And, although, again, you know, if you're talking telecommunications, they're all pretty shady to some degree.
It's like I keep seeing infomercial for Vonage, voice over internet protocol service, where people can have regular home phone service over the internet and how that's undercutting all the major phone companies.
It's going to come to a point where all of your multimedia experience is going to come down to, like, one provider service, meaning your music, your movies, your internet, your television, all going to be one and the same.
Yeah.
And I hope that we're still afforded a choice on companies to provide those services when that time comes. Because if it comes down to one big, you know, global market with one company running it, chances are AOL, we might be better off going back to reading books or actually having conversations face-to-face with people.
Oh, that would be terrible.
God forbid we have human interaction.
It's kind of funny how the internet is probably a librarian's worst nightmare. Because on the one side, you've got people who are reading. You have to read the text on the screen and everything. But on the other hand, people aren't going to the library anymore when they can access it from home.
I don't know. I mean, case in point, I had to go to the library tonight.
Well, I guess there are certain things. And if you're in school or in your college, yeah, you're going to get shafted no matter what. You're going to have to buy physical books.
So yay, college kids like me, keeping America literate.
Yay for literacy.
I read that good English.
You's all edumacated.
I is. Speaking of crappy companies giving crappy customer service, PS3 launch. Price doubles, stock drops, and release date pushed way back. Its stock price saw this huge drop. Doesn't sound like much, but it's a huge sink, you know, when you're talking 3.6%, dropping $2.45 per share. Mm-hmm. And the fall affected the entire Tokyo stock market. And it actually dropped the Nikkei index down to 1.75%, which was a pretty significant drop. The reason this is all happening is because it's predicted that the launch of the PlayStation 3 console could be delayed anywhere from 6 to 12 months from its current spring 2006 window, which would result in an autumn launch for Japan, late 2006 to early 2007 launched in the U.S. And the other thing that's really screwing up Sony is, I understand they really want to put some really cool stuff under the hood in this system, but it looks right now that the actual initial bill of production materials for the PS3 could approach $900 per console. You know, this is what Sony is actually going to shell out per system. So at launch, you know, you're going to be looking at a very expensive console, at least $400, I think is pretty safe to assume. And if that's the case, if you're dropping $400 on the system, that means Sony's eating $500 per console sold. So, I mean, the rumor about the $80, $90 PlayStation 3 games doesn't sound too much like a rumor anymore because Sony's going to have to recoup their costs somehow.
Oh, man, I would love to see the figures from, like, the Xbox or the Xbox 360. What are the raw materials costing and how much of a loss is Microsoft taking for the 360s for each unit?
That information is out there, so I would encourage you all to go out and look at it. But, you know, ironically, all this just really spells really, really good news for Nintendo because I guess the Nintendo dev kit that the developers are using right now only cost about $2,000, which is what they're estimating about one-tenth of what the Sony PS3 dev kit is costing developers. So right now they're predicting like a $150 launch for the Nintendo Revolution.
Yeah, and that's going to sell like gangbusters right there because you've got a public out there who doesn't have all this money. And yet everything is just costing more and more as time goes on.
You know, you and I are both really excited about the new-gen consoles, and it just seems that you can't win when it comes to the new-gen consoles. If you want an Xbox 360, it's almost impossible to find one. And then, you know, you're going to get nailed with these huge bundles and end up you know, paying a lot more than you initially thought you were going to pay. Mm-hmm. We may never see the Sony PS3 on U.S. shores. Yeah, I mean, this is just really opening the doors very, very wide for Nintendo. So if you're going to back a next-gen console right now, it looks like the Revolution is the one to back.
Because the 360s are in short to no supply, and yeah, the PS3 is so far off in release. Meanwhile, Nintendo has this great window of opportunity to just totally make a killing. And yeah, the price will be extremely attractive to gamers who are, on the whole, not made of money.
You know, if Nintendo can get a holiday launch, that could probably cripple Sony. I mean, realistically, you know, because Microsoft is already saying they will have more 360s on the market, and by summer of this year, you shouldn't have a problem getting one. You can walk into any store and pick one up, no problem. If Nintendo can manage to get that thing out by, like, this holiday season, I really don't know if the desire or drive is going to be there, or really any real public interest for people to rush out and buy a PS3 when they finally launch. I didn't think that they'd be the last out of the gate, but...
As a video game geek, though, you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to pay for the Sony PS3? What is your absolute maximum?
The unfortunate thing is a lot of things that were promised at E3 last year regarding the PS3, we're realizing aren't going to be true. Data size of the Blu-ray and the initial price point.
The true HD specs aren't going to be doable, apparently.
Exactly. As more and more of this information is coming out, I'm saying to myself, yeah, as a game enthusiast and as a big Sony supporter, I don't really think it's that high on my priority list right now, you know, only because basically you're going to get something that's slightly better than the PS2. But even that developer for Sony that got fired said the things that they're working on are far from next gen. So the Revolution is going to have download capability to download like every single game that's ever been developed by Nintendo. Ever. So you're talking about this humongous, humongous library and this really, really cheap system. I think I'd go out and buy 3 Revolutions before I considered picking up a PS3.
Backwards compatibility is like the biggest selling point right there. And of course, just the price of the console itself.
Yeah, I'm just really disappointed with Sony. This has been a crappy season for Sony between the root kits on the music CDs and all the disappointing news regarding the PS3.
They're making promises they can't keep, you know, in terms of HD. Right there, think about that. You're going to pay premium for this system whenever it drops, and you're not even going to get the maximum entertainment value out of it unless you have an HD TV, you know, a top quality system and all that. And of course, in and of itself, that is a crippling expense too.
And I can also imagine them going through what Microsoft went through on launch and just not having enough consoles to satisfy the market. They have already gotten enough bad news this past season. I don't see Sony's future being too bright.
And that's depressing considering we're both really looking forward to the PS3 as a system, but all of these events, it ain't looking good.
So what do we get in exchange? We get AOL Instant Messenger for the PSP.
Yay.
Not.
Let's back up a little bit. In terms of portable devices, Steve and I love the T-Mobile Sidekick and the Sidekick 2 for its great integration of AOL's Instant Messenger program. In terms of a phone and a portable device that you can chat with, that simply cannot be beat. Trios don't do it. Texting with your phone, alphanumeric keypads, that just doesn't do it. You need the full keyboard, and the Sidekick has been the way to go in terms of that. And PSP is a great system, but you don't have a keyboard. And if you're chatting with a bunch of people, think about how much time and how cramped your fingers are going to get sitting there scrolling through a bunch of alphanumeric texting.
And that's why I sit here literally shaking my head, disappointed with Sony, because, you know, that was like the huge thing Sony was touting when they released the web browser for the PSP. Ooh, look, surf the web on your PSP. Well, really, what's the use if you don't have an integrated keyboard?
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some in development. I've yet to see one on the shelf. I mean, I'll probably grab one if one comes out because I like the portability of the PSP. But until then, I don't surf the net on a PSP because I don't want to sit there and type for 3 hours to enter one URL.
That's like a car company creating a totally fuel-efficient hydrogen car, putting them out on the market, selling them at a reasonable price, so you rush out and buy one, and then they tell you, oh yeah, you know, the really cool car, pretty sweet, it's got all these bells and whistles, but hydrogen power won't be available until sometime next year. You know, I think it's pretty much the same thing. Look at all this really neat stuff you can do with the PSP, but we're not going to release a keyboard just yet.
What do you guys think? Give us some feedback here. TheBigBallBroadcast@gmail.com or leave a comment on our listener line at 818-574-3607. We want to hear what you guys think. You are listening to The Big Ball Broadcast. When we come back, Serenity makes money after all.
And now another useless fact.
The Big Ball Broadcast needs your input now. Visit bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Click on Listener Survey and tell us what you think. And if you don't fill out the listener survey, every 5 minutes, a kitten cries. Isn't that sad? So please, get off your butt and do it.
It is now time for your final exam.
Okay, I'm not ready. Can we do this tomorrow? Because I need one
more
day.
A ninja is always prepared for what may come his way. The exam begins. Question one. Recite the ninja fight song.
The shadow serpent. I can see the light. Assassins of silence.
Incorrect. Next question to you, Ollie.
Okay, I'm not ready. Can I look at my notes really fast?
No. Name every ninja master and all his disciples since the 6th century BC. Spelling counts.
Are you serious? Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Chuck Norris, Chuck E. Cheese, Hong Kong Fooey.
Incorrect. You are weak like the salted slug and your mind is slow like the sloth on sake.
Oh, man.
Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve with you on episode 27 of The Big Bald Broadcast. Sexy. Any hoozle. Serenity makes gobs on DVD. Universal is now officially in the black instead of the red, thanks to that little film I keep whoring called Serenity, based on the Firefly franchise. Total production cost for the film was $39 million, with a rumored ad cost of $10 million, so total just under $50 million. Its U.S. box office take was not impressive, $25 million. Tack on its international theatrical, $13 million, and that leaves Universal $28 million in the hole. Fast forward a couple months to the DVD release. It dominated Amazon's DVD charts for several weeks, and as of January 31st, over 2 million DVDs of Serenity have been sold, and VideoBusiness.com reports that $9 million in DVD rental revenue has been generated. So, that's a really positive thing for Serenity fans and browncoats everywhere, and everyone kind of discovering the show and the franchise on DVD, and I'm super happy to see that happen. That's kind of like the comeuppance for it. It's like, okay, it didn't do that well on theatrical release. There's always DVD, buddies.
And I know a lot of people are asking, okay, since the Serenity Firefly franchise has redeemed itself, what does that mean for the future? Are we going to see a sequel film or a sequel spin-off series or whatever? Chances are, no. The reason being, Universal feels at this time it's still too risky of a business to back a movie that, I guess, you know, barely got their money back, and it took a while to do so. Would more people be more inclined to go out and see a sequel? Probably, because a lot of people got turned on to it after the fact when the DVD came out. But at this point right now, Universal isn't willing to back that franchise because it's still a little too risky. Had it made an extra $50 million, yeah, they probably would consider it, but at this point, all signs point to no.
And it's kind of funny where you have films that come out that don't do this poorly, but they do okay, and they're already talking trilogies before the first film even comes out.
That is true, and I guess it really depends on who your financial backer is.
Yep, it's all dependent on who is writing those checks. So rumors abound, rumors continue to surface every day regarding the Serenity and Firefly franchise. But until Universal makes a comment or the creator Joss Whedon does, who knows what's going to happen. I'm watching it close, and as soon as something official comes up, or not, I'll report it because I'm a Serenity whore.
Isn't Whedon moving on to direct the Wonder Woman film?
Yes, he is. He is working on the final act of the screenplay right now, and there is no casting news, or at least he's not made public who his choices are for Wonder Woman, but that's definitely the next thing on his plate. So even if Universal were to greenlight a sequel to Serenity, we're not going to see it for at least another several years.
And speaking of a release several years in the making, Steven Spielberg has finally come out and definitively confirmed Indiana Jones 4 will follow Munich.
Yay!
I was waiting for the erupting applause here. And actually, some quotes here from Spielberg. He says, "I haven't given up making entertaining films, but over the last decade I have been making some films that express the respect I have for history. I'm about to make Indiana Jones 4, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the sweet dessert I give those who had to chow down on the bitter herbs that I've used in Munich. A very interesting way for Mr. Spielberg to put that into perspective. It seems everybody's on board, and from what we can tell, filming should actually start sometime this year.
I wonder if it'll involve Nazis again, because after Schindler's List, you probably don't want to go down that path again.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, too, just in the timeline of the Indiana Jones series, World War II would be far over, given the age of Harrison Ford now. You know, I don't think it's going to be a sequential film, meaning I don't think the events in Indiana Jones 4 are going to butt right up to the ending of Last Crusade, not with Harrison Ford at 63 years old. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, and Sean Connery, if they want to bring back Pops.
Hey, is Harrison Ford still with Calista Flockhart?
Oh, no. No, I think that was doomed a long time ago.
Just like the Indiana Jones franchise.
No, Harrison Ford has just been busy making movies where people screw with Harrison Ford. They all look like the same movie. I mean, Firewall looks like Air Force One. It just changed it from a president to a banker.
Off on another tangent, don't know if you caught this, but I believe it was a couple weeks ago, Harrison Ford was on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Harrison Ford got kind of blindsided by O'Brien when he brought up the Star Wars Holiday Special.
I saw a video of that.
Was that priceless or what?
That was awesome.
First of all, Harrison Ford pretty much denied that the Holiday Special ever took place. And getting called on that bluff, Conan O'Brien said, well, what would you say if I showed a clip? And you could tell that Harrison Ford is just incredibly uncomfortable with the prospect of that happening. And in the end, he said, whatever, screw it, go ahead. If you're going to show it, show it. And they showed this god-awful clip from that god-awful special, and Ford was just left utterly speechless.
If you're trying to chase down the 1978 Star Wars Holiday Special, it is not released, and it is highly doubtful it will ever be released officially. If you go to a comic book convention or maybe some anime cons, dig through the stuff, you'll see some people who have bootlegged it, and you can buy a copy. There is no actual good version of it available out there. Everything is like third, fourth VHS generation. It's just totally degraded and pretty hard to watch anyway. But the content, oh, God.
I don't care if you're the biggest Star Wars fan out there. If you have any love or respect left for Star Wars, do not. I have to emphasize, do not even bother wasting your time, money, or effort watching this abortion.
Yeah, the prequel films are masterpieces. Okay, they're Shakespeare. They're classics of literature compared to this.
Although, if you do want to see Carrie Fisher totally freaking wasted, maybe that's some entertainment value for you.
And if you want to see Chewbacca's family, you know, Lumpy. Remember Lumpy? Or Beatrice Arthur, you know, as the bartender in the cantina, and Harvey Korman, and I'm dating myself here.
For those of you who aren't in the know, it is actually considered the first appearance of Boba Fett. It's an animated form. There's a brief animated storyline that takes place, and it is technically the very first appearance of Boba Fett. So that's probably the only part worth catching. And if you go to Google and if you just type that in, you can find the extract of just the animated portion. And I'd probably recommend you doing that before you drop down any money and pick up a crap copy.
Yep, because crap is all there is, and that whole special, except for that animated sequence, which is more a novelty curiosity thing, because the animation style is, if you've ever seen the Beatles' Yellow Submarine animated movie, it's really trippy, like that.
So yes, kids, take two hits of acid before you watch it.
Because Otherworld Steve told you so.
Oh, watch the subpoena start pouring in.
Oh, here it is. The inbox is filling up, dude. Dark Crystal and Labyrinth get new resin collectibles, courtesy of Plan B Toys. These guys were recently at Toy Fair in New York showing off some new mini busts that will be retailing for $40, coming soon to a novelty shop near you. From the Dark Crystal, you'll get the Gartham, those giant cockroach thingies, and Skektek and Urshek. Say that fast five times. And from Labyrinth, you get the Goblin King, David Bowie, wearing a sock in his pants. There's a possible variant version to possibly become a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive this summer. So fans of both of those Henson properties will get to look forward to more collectibles.
You know what? I bet you didn't expect this to come out of my mouth, but I actually really enjoyed Labyrinth. I thought that was a very well-done piece of theatrical work there.
I liked it okay. Out of the two, I definitely prefer Dark Crystal.
Agreed. But I do like Labyrinth. I can be a man and admit that. I don't think it necessarily holds up today, especially with David Bowie, but...
yeah.
That's neither here nor there. In more toy news, another set of figures that was unveiled during the New York Toy Fair was the, to me anyway, very highly anticipated domestic release of some Full Metal Alchemist figures.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Those are pretty freaking sweet. If you go over to Southern Island's website, southernisland.com, you can actually pre-order all four figures in one bundle package, and I believe right now pre-orders are $50. And I know that sounds a little expensive, but you got to remember, each of the four figures, and right now at launch, it's Ed, Al, Lust, and Gluttony, they each come with a piece of the Laboratory 5 playset. All the bases connect together to form a portion of Laboratory 5 with the red water containers and everything. And with the future releases of the figures, they're going to continue to come with the playset bases. And by the time they're done with that run, you'll actually have a reproduction of the entire floor and walls of Laboratory 5. So really, really cool stuff. Go over to Southern Island and check out the pre-order page.
I'm kind of upset that it's taken this long to get Americanized figures out for this great show. You know, I'm just worried the window of opportunity was missed, but we'll see. Hopefully, you know, you'll be able to march into Target and Toys R Us and see Full Metal Alchemist figures on the shelf. How awesome would that be?
Yeah, because unfortunately, as you're listening to this podcast, there are only 3 episodes left on Cartoon Network, Full Metal Alchemist. So yeah, it's like really late in the game for the figures to be coming out. Blame the licensor.
So if you don't have a convention heading your way, or if you don't foresee yourself driving madly across town trying to chase these figures down, you can go to the Southern Islands website and get that pre-order on the way. That's probably the best way to go, actually. You'll save some money because the stores like to mark them up.
And I honestly don't know if I should be talking about this or not, but you know what? Screw it. I'm going to talk about it anyway. Southern Island is also doing convention exclusives. And at the upcoming San Diego Comic-Con, they will have an exclusive Full Metal Alchemist figure. I won't mention which one right now, but what I will tell you, it is super limited to 500 pieces. And it's just going to be available at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, and what's in the back of my head is Steve will be asking me to get one for him since I intend on attending the Comic-Con. And, oh, I'm just imagining the long lines. All those San Diego Comic-Con exclusives, people have to get numbers and stand in these long lines for hours. And then a lot of these people end up selling them on eBay at 3 times the price.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Kyle, I'll try to keep my ego aside, but I've already secured myself one, so you don't have to worry about it.
Never mind. I'm going to be asking Steve for a...
I'm being very well taken care of by Southern Island, so if you're listening, thanks, Joseph, who is the president of Southern Island. Good guy. Good guy looking out for the peeps who look out for them.
In other anime-related news, Samurai 7 is hitting satellite and cable TV very, very soon. If you have Dish Network, Animania HD, which is channel 9474 on Dish, will have the U.S. TV premiere of Samurai 7 on Wednesday, March 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern. The cable TV premiere will air on the International Film Channel, IFC, on Saturday, April 1st at 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Samurai 7 is an anime sci-fi retelling of the Akira Kurosawa classic Seven Samurai, and the anime series is currently available from Funimation on DVD. Just think old-school samurai swordplay meets mecha. It's a really, really cool show, beautiful digital animation, widescreen, and, of course, I had to do this news story because I'm in it! I do a little brief recurring role as a farmer named Mosuke. So check out Samurai 7's debut on Dish Network and cable TV soon.
I'm not in it, but I received Samurai 7 Volume 4, which came in a really cool box, and it comes with a ton of art layout stuff. So if you're a fan of the series, if you're a fan of Akira Kurosawa's work, and if you want some like really, really, really cool art stuff to look at, pick up Volumes 1 through 3, of course, but make sure you pick up Volume 4 in the special box because it is really, really cool.
I think actually they all come with the same extra. The deluxe version all come with the art books, and they are worth it. So go ahead and plunk down the extra $10. It is worth it to get the deluxe. The wait for Kong ain't very long. How do you like that? I worked on that for hours. Anyway, March 28th, we'll see the release of Peter Jackson's sorta, kinda, blockbuster, Gigantor Monkey Opus. There will be 3 versions, count them, 3, single disc, full frame and widescreen, and then a two-disc special edition widescreen. Of course, DVD purists out there are going, wait, don't tell me there's going to be a director's cut too, right? Yes, actually, there are strong indications that the studio is working on yet a longer director's cut in November, as if 188 minutes wasn't enough. I actually think the theatrical cut should be snipped down, you know, tighten it up. I think it'd actually make the movie better. It was good, but it could have had much more of an impact if it weren't so frickin' long.
I haven't seen the film yet, I admit, but a lot of reviews I've either heard from people who have seen it or I've read on the internet. They've said if you really want to enjoy the film, skip the entire first hour. So when it comes out on DVD, just basically keep chapter skipping until you're, you know, 60 minutes in, and then you'll really enjoy it.
When they get to Skull Island, that's basically all you need to know. I mean, I can appreciate the desire to, you know, beef up characters and make you care about everybody, but really, the source material is a movie that's less than 90 minutes long, and to stretch it into 3 hours plus, I mean, come on, it just reeks of excess.
And I think the other problem that film had coming out of the gate is the fact that it's a remake. There's really nothing new that can be offered. You kind of know how it ends, you know?
Yeah, you don't get anything new except updated effects, really. And not really a modernization, because it's still set in the same time frame as the original films. It's yet another one of those unnecessary Hollywood remakes, but it was a Peter Jackson wet dream come true. That was his favorite film, and he got to remake it, so why not, right? If you got a studio paying for it.
And you got Jack Black, so take that for what it's worth.
I hope they stick his great King Kong song. Perhaps you've heard it on a previous episode of the Big Ball Broadcast. I just thought it was just a hilarious song that he did on Saturday Night Live, and I hope they include that as an extra on the disc.
Actually, I'll wrap with this just in the gossip column for films. First and foremost, there's a new Laura Croft. Wow, this chick is smoking.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Getting all goose-pimply. Yeah. I don't have the information up on my computer, so I'll just tell you what I recall from memory. This chick was working retail in London, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, she gets picked to be the next Laura Croft. I'm only assuming because Angelina Jolie is, like, so out of the market right now, I'm sure she'd want, you know, $30 million to consider making another Tomb Raider film. Google that, because this girl is, she's a sight to behold. But in Angelina Jolie rumor news, it's being very strongly rumored that she's up for a lead in Sin City 2.
I would welcome that, because I love the first one. I think it's a great ensemble cast. She would fit in perfectly, even though I don't know what the story is. I like her as an actress, and of course she's hot. Perfect person to put in Sin City 2. If you enjoy, or even if you don't enjoy, we still want your feedback. I know we sound like a broken record, but we do thank you for the downloads. We thank you for the email. We thank you for the voicemails. Keep them coming, please, because we'll continue to read them on the show. We'll continue to play them on the show and make it as interactive as we can. We're one big fan community here on the Big Ball Broadcast, and we appreciate your patronage. Until next time, this is Kyle Bear.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail on our listener line at 818-574-3607. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!